win.
He'll come back for the second. India have won the test match. India have won the series.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the 81 All Out podcast. This is your host, Siddhartha Vaidyanathan. And I'm joined today by two regulars, Ashoka, who's at ABVan on Twitter, and Karthikeya, who's at Cricketing View, and also writes a Substack and occasional articles for ESPN Cricinfo and other outlets. Welcome. We're here to talk about the week that was in the World Cup, a lot of excitement, some big upsets, England losing to Afghanistan, South Africa losing to Netherlands. I mean, again, take the word upset with a pinch of salt, because these teams are good enough to have been the top 10 teams in the world. I mean, they came to the World Cup ahead of West Indies. So, you know, were West Indies to beat England or were West Indies to beat South Africa, it would be, you know, probably surprising, but not like considered some great shock. So, yeah, a lot going on, and we can get into all that. But before that, I just want to, you know, talk about a bit of sad news that came through in the morning. The colossal cricketer, one of the greatest spinners that India has produced, Bishan Singh Bedi, you know, news came in that he passed away. Really sad to hear that, because, you know, for many of us who didn't watch Bedi, you know, who just read about him and heard about him, there was so much of an aura and a romance around him as a cricketer. First of all, he was a, you know, bowler with a poetic action. He also was the kind of bowler who always wanted to buy a wicket. You know, he was known to be someone who was continuously gave the ball air and teased the batsman out rather than trying to restrict runs or trying to, you know, cramp them up. That is, of course, the romantic side of him. But I'm sure there was so much more to him as a spinner, about how he varied his length, his control. And really, I mean, you know, he more than anything else, he was also a really magnanimous man. You know, as a cricketer, he was forever appreciative of the opposition. He, you know, there are famous videos and photos where he's actually, you know, clapping after the batter has hit him for a six or a batter has hit him for a four. Yeah, I mean, he was somebody for whom the game was paramount, and, you know, he didn't fall into these traps of the jingoistic traps that you often see people fall into. He spoke his mind. He was one of the very, very, very few former cricketers who didn't hold back when he had to say anything about the functioning of the board, the BCCI, the shenanigans. And I'm sure that had he been in the pink of health now during the World Cup, he would have had a lot to say about the organization of the tournament and how India, how the BCCI was going about it. At the same time, he was instrumental in the development of several cricketers, young cricketers, you know, people like Yuvraj Singh and others from Punjab have a lot to owe to him. He was he was constantly searching for young spinners, and you know, his involvement with the game has been, like, you know, it's hard to quantify. That's how much Bedi has done for India. I mean, of course, Delhi cricket owes plenty to him. He pretty much took them to become Ranji champions back when they were not that great a side. I mean, through the 70s and 80s, Bedi was like the figure in Delhi cricket.
I mean, apart from Patawdy, who, you know, went to England to study and all that, and then played for Sussex, and a few others who played, like Farooq Engineer, who played as a professional, Palancher. Bedi was, I think, really, I mean, If you leave out, like, the cricketers who played under the Maharaja's patronage, you know, and the foreign cricketers who were hired by the Maharajas to come to India, like Frank Tarrant and all those, you know, to teach Indian players and to play for the Maharaja's teams. If you leave out those, then I think Bedi was not only India's probably the best, not probably, I think pretty much certainly the best slow left arm orthodox bowler in the world in his day, and the best ever from India, but he was also, you know, the first really professional cricketer India had. I mean, he took what, 400, nearly 450 wickets for North Hants in the 70s. He took over 1500 wickets in all in his career. And that's an enormous amount of bowling and an enormous amount of wicket. You know, I mean, that he must have, for like two or three decades, he must have like basically pretty much every week, every other week, he must have played a cricket match. And in those days, before, you know, they were making all this big money from TV and all that, that's quite a remarkable thing.
Also, I must mention here that we were very, very close to getting Bishan Bedi on this podcast in, I think this must have been around 2020, you know, in the early days of COVID lockdown. And I got a chance to contact him and speak to him. And we had a long chat on the phone. And I mentioned, you know, the things I wanted to talk to him about his career, about spin, about what he sort of, how he played the game and how he learned the game. But unfortunately, he had a bit of sickness. He fell ill around that time when we were supposed to record. And after that, his health just started deteriorating. So we never really got a chance to get him on the podcast. So, and now we never will. But again, I will link the Suresh Menon episode, and that tells you a lot about Bedi. And also, please read Suresh Menon's book on Bedi, which is a lovely portrait of the man. Anyway, having said that, and passing on our condolences to the Bedi family and his close ones and everybody else in the cricketing fraternity who has who is grieving this. Having said all that, let's move on to the World Cup. We can start with the game on Sunday, India against New Zealand. A close game, one of the rare close games in this World Cup, and also the first game where India were really challenged. I mean, apart from that, they've been blowing away the opposition again, by the way. But they bowled first, which seems to be like a sort of a theme for them in this World Cup. They've been bowling first, restricting the opposition. Their bowlers have been terrific through all phases of the game, but especially in the middle phase, as we discussed, you know, how they've been tying down the opposition. Nobody's really, you know, gone after them. New Zealand were a little different because they actually did try, unlike other teams, to go after some of the bowlers. I mean, they tried to go after Kuldeep. They, you know, they couldn't go after Jadeja because he was bowling so well. But they also, you know, there was an attempt made, at least in the middle overs, to sort of accelerate. They couldn't get the kick later on because Shami came back with another terrific spell of pace and control. And then the total they got was perhaps 30 short. I mean, they would have loved to get 300 or 310. And the moment they got just 270 odd, then India were always in a good position to chase it, especially when they got the start that they did. You know, again, as I said, there was quite a bit of luck early on, Rohit Sharma, Shubman Gill, and things could have changed had India been three down quickly. You never know how this game would have gone, but yeah, in the end, there was enough to pull it off. So yeah, thoughts, Ashoka?
India have played like one match five times in this World Cup. So in a way, I think this is a slight bit of, you know, cheating. They have bowled first every time, and every time the opposition has been, you know, well short of what could have been considered as a par target on that pitch. So India found out that for the fifth time in a row that they can chase all under par targets irrespective of the bowling quality of the opposition. That's what has happened here. So I do wish that now they start batting first because you don't want to find out in the semi-final that you bat first and get out all out for 180 or something. But that is unlikely to happen. But I do wish that they bat first and see what their bowling attack can do or can defend.
It's also tricky for the opposition to know who to really go after, right? I mean, it's not like, see, most teams here are have this fifth bowler hole. I mean, you have like a part-timer there who, or a couple of part-timers who, you know, are not, who are generally going to go for like six and over. But if you go after them, they can, you can even go much higher. But the problem is, even with Hardik miss, with our Hardik missing now and Shami coming in, you know, with that kind of an attack, it's hard to know where to really, where to target. So yeah, Kuldeep, I think, is the most obvious target because, you know, he's a wrist spinner and he's going for, he's trying to attack. And yeah, so he will give the ball air from time to time. And on pitches like this, you, it's worth taking a chance. But, you know, Jadeja, Bumrah, Siraj, Shami, I mean, who, where? I mean, the moment you decide to go somewhere, then the chances are that you'll lose a couple of wickets. So I think that is the big challenge against India. And I think, in fact, with Hardik out, I felt that the even though the batting was weakened, the bowling was strengthened. So, you know, that, that's a problem for other teams. Yeah.
See, the problem here is that it's not that teams are, you know, you can target a bowler, but they did target Kuldeep. And I think they even hit Jadeja for a six in this match. But the point is then, on either side of those boundaries, no, they, these guys bowl a lot of dot balls. So, you the opposition is struggling to get some 11-run overs, 12-run overs a little consistently. These guys pull off a lot of 4-5 run over in between the boundary. So what has happened is it's getting tougher and tougher to maintain that 5+ run rate until at least the 40th over. I think New Zealand were the did. I mean, New Zealand and Afghanistan did it, but it's tough, man. These guys accumulate a lot of dot balls. These guys are accurate. The field, you know, it's very claustrophobic for batsmen to score freely against these guys. So tough. But fine. I mean, all said and done, I think, you know, that's the fun part. No, India did not have their all-rounder, right? And this was one team which scored 180 runs in the middle overs, which was the one thing that other teams were struggling to do. And they restricted Rohit Sharma, right? And they still ended up losing with two overs to spare. It's crazy. They have done most things that other teams are struggling to do and still lost the match. So that is what now South Africa, England, everyone who's going to face. I think India is probably through. So anyone who's going to face India in the semi-final, that's what they'll have to think about. So what to do? I mean, they need a very, very good day. A lot of things have to go their way to, you know, compete and beat this side.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, see, the thing is also, I sometimes wonder if with the rules, right, with the way the rules are, whether teams are generally leaving it too late, unnecessarily, you know, if it's better for them to go, for instance, between over 25 and 40, rather than wait for over 40, you know, with wickets in hand and then try to go, because I feel you'd rather take the chance earlier rather than go deep and deep, because I think in the end, it's not going to be that easy. I mean, with the field also, with the rules also. So, I don't know. Anyway, let's see how the South Africa game I'm looking forward to, because, you know, if it is a batting pitch, then South Africa have shown some real, you know, sort of, they have some, seem to have some real ammunition on those pitches. So, let's see how that goes. But I'm, you know, India, I think, will still, even on a road, have still shown that they can be, have good control. Yeah, Karthik, yeah.
I mean, yeah, Ashoka is, I sort of agree with Ashoka that India have been playing the same match 5 times now. They're basically either being sent in or they're choosing to bowl. I'm curious as to why teams are allowing India to chase. Once you have an under par score, no, then you are basically not only getting the Indian batting side to, you know, chase a smallish total, or rather an under par total, but what's more is that they're also giving the chasing side also has the advantage of knowing a target. So the problem New Zealand had in the first innings here was that when they got to 200 in the 37th over, they, in the last 13 overs, they still had to like push for as many as they could get, right? So they still would have wanted like 100, 120 in the last 13 overs of the innings, especially with 7 wickets in hand. And whereas India, when they got to 200 around the same time, similar time in their innings, they didn't have that pressure. So you had basically, you know, it was a much simpler chase. Now, if India had been under that pressure, right, you get not pressure, but in that situation, you know, where India got to 200 in the 37th over batting first, and India had to chase, you know, as many runs as they can get, then there's a chance that India will get an underpar score. It's one thing being 200 in the 37th over chasing 270, and it's another thing being 200 in the 37th over, you know, looking for 310 or 320. You know, those are two very different match states. So, I mean, I think you would always want to be the chasing option over there.
All these teams, see, this England went and said they will field against South Africa, and then they got like
England
clobbered in that heat.
Yeah, I don't know that heat and all that. I don't know how much of an effect that has. You know, this is not the first time these people are playing in 34 degree weather. Every time they go to Australia for the Ashes, Brisbane is like this hot.
No, heat is fine, but I think I feel that first game of the World Cup, right, that England-New Zealand game, where, you know, the dew perhaps came in later on and, you know, New Zealand basically thrashed England. I think that probably had an effect, and for England to say, okay, let's try and capitalize on that. Because even, you know, even though the dew perhaps didn't come in as much as they would have wanted, you know, that's seems to be the way teams are thinking or chasing.
Yeah, that's true. But I generally think that if you're playing a side whose strength is bowling, like if you have the weaker bowling attack, then you want your strength in the second innings, no? You want to play a stronger hand in the second innings, you know, because then you know the target, and then you're especially if your stronger hand is batting, you want to chase. So I think that, you know, India's fans are really not used to being in this position, because, you know, for the longest time, all these other teams had better attacks than India. So we used to get into this whole thing about, oh, India struggled to chase. But the problem there was a lot of these teams also had batting as good as India, at least as good as India. But with New Zealand, especially like their top order is in like hot form right now. Like, you know, Conway is making runs, Ravindra is making runs, Mitchell is making runs. You know, Williamson played one game, he made runs in that game. You know, they're like playing really well. So I was really, you know, I don't know. They didn't have a choice, I think. They lost the toss. But I think teams need to sort of, you know, just, if they win the toss, they have to make India bat first, you know, and make it so that, you know, if they can get their batting lineup to know a target against the Indian bowling, their batting will be easier for them, rather than, you know, having to chase as many as you can.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I mean, and especially because, I mean, the thing is that India's batting is good. I mean, no doubt. I mean, Rohit is batting in terrific form, and he's also, you know, riding his luck. I mean, for all said and done, you know, he's having some good fortune in his innings, and he's making the most of it. I mean, he's not really, and you know, he's not holding back. He's just going for it. He's hitting the ball so supremely. I mean, it's just coming out straight off the middle. I mean, there's no point of time where you feel like if he lofts, it's just going. It's not like you feel he's going to get caught in the outfield or anything. This is when he's hitting them, it's gone. And, you know, same thing. I mean, Shubman Gill is, again, I mean, the sound that the ball makes when it takes off from that bat. I mean, you can just immediately know that, oh my goodness, this is a shot and a half. So, yeah, they're all batting well, no doubt. But, you know, I would like to see, like, how they go about when they are batting first, because that's always tricky to sort of set the target, especially when you're playing against a team with a pretty deep and strong batting lineup. You want to, you know, have that. You don't want to go under par. You want to have that total, even though your bowling is strong. I want to see that. And I also want to see a time when, you know, they actually face a par total, like on those conditions. So, you know, that could be tricky. I mean, India is strong. Sure, the batting is strong. But I feel the bowling is stronger and is making their batting look good in these conditions. The bowling is almost like carrying the team to an extent that the lineup has a lot of cushion when they're chasing. You know, you chase 273 with 2 overs to spare, despite losing, you know, getting to the lower order, despite having Shami to come in and still win comfortably. I mean, that is a credit to the bowling, I think, more than anything, to have actually restricted New Zealand to 273 in this innings.
I don't think people say this is a very convincing win for India, wherein, you know, you had all that nonsense of Kohli trying to get to the 100 and all that. Fine. But I didn't think this was that easy a win or that comfortable a win. It was quite close.
I mean,
this
it was pretty clear that when Kohli and Jadeja were batting and the target was pretty small, it was still clear that they didn't want to lose a wicket at any cost, because India's final three could last three balls, basically. I mean, that's how unpredictable the last three are, in the yesterday's lineup. So, yeah, I mean, they were taking absolutely no chances. And in fact, there was this one moment where Ravindra bowls and Jadeja goes high and, you know, the ball goes for six. But had Chapman not lost his footing there, it could have been a catch on the boundary. I mean, you never know. I mean, had he been stable, he might have been able to take a catch on the boundary or one of those catches where you tap the ball, you catch it, and then you throw the ball up and then you come back and catch it. It could have been one of those catches. So after that, they just shut shop. They're like, okay, even like a few singles here is fine, but we're not going to take too much of a risk. So I don't think it was convincing. I think it was very close. And again, I mean, one sort of, there was a moment early on when Rohit was, he sort of top edge, cut the ball, and then the top edge flew to Daryl Mitchell at first slip. I mean, I probably fell like an inch short. But you never know. Had that gone to hand, had a few things here and there happened, and there were even like some inside edges that Kohli got, you never know what the game could have gone the other way. Yeah.
Yeah. You can say the same about New Zealand also. To be fair, you can say the same, because India dropped like three catches. The KL Rahul catch was a tough one, but Jadeja, you don't expect him to drop that. And you don't expect Bumrah to drop that. So, I mean, they could have also bundled New Zealand for like 200 or something. But fair. Fair is fair. This was a good match. See, this week has been like, full eventful week in the World Cup. When we last spoke, we spoke about India-Pakistan. After that, 10 matches have gone through, of which two have given surprise results. You don't expect Afghanistan to beat England. You don't expect Netherlands to beat South Africa. Both happened. Those were fun matches to watch. I thought even Australia-Pakistan was a fun match to watch, because both teams were so tentative. Australia should have made 400 odd. So, but Pakistan pulled things back to 360. Then Pakistan were in a good position chasing. And then a lot of wickets fell. So that was also an entertaining match.
For me, the most weird match was that South Africa-Netherlands match. Because, first of all, like, it's not like it was played on some minefield of a pitch, or it was played on some really, you know, some tricky pitch or anything. These guys, like, they were just missing. it's like the ball is approaching them and they're just playing out of the line. And in Netherlands, bowlers are good, no doubt. They're accurate and they have some good spinners there and good medium pacers. But I don't know why the base South African collapse was weird. I mean, the English collapse was not that weird because Afghanistan were bowling very well. I mean, Nabi, Mujib and Rashid were bowling well, and England's batting were being found out, you could see. You know, it was good bowling, outfoxing good batting. But Netherlands, South Africa, I didn't even understand what was going on. Why are these guys getting out?
No, there was like those 3 days, even Afghanistan, England, couple of guys missed a straight ball, man. That was an epidemic for 3-4 days. Like players catching fever. I thought this was a general fever all batters have got. Afghanistan, England, we saw dismissals of straight, harmless balls, didn't seem much and all that. Same with Netherlands, South Africa. In between, there was one Sri Lanka, Australia match where such a thing had happened. Like Sri Lankan batters, it could have been like the third surprising result in a row. Like it was sandwiched between these two matches where Sri Lanka were in a good position. After 22 overs, they were 120 for no loss or something. And I thought these guys were going to make 280 and Australia are cooked here. Then like I go away, do some other things. I come back. These guys are all out for 209. And then Australia chased it, but they were also not very convincing in their chase. They finished it in 35 overs, but they lost a lot of wickets. So Australia, they are not looking as formidable as we think they would be. They won against Sri Lanka and Pakistan, but it could have gone, a lot worse for them. They could have been sitting below the table with England if things have not gone their way.
That in itself is not surprising. The scoring rates have increased in one-day cricket. So collapses are also going to become, more common. You'd see, like, for instance, chasing 280 and all, you have to take chances, no? I mean, the deceptive thing while watching them is that, see, when they take a chance and when it comes off, you as the person watching, you often think, well, absolutely nothing else could have happened here. It's absolutely, the batter nailed it. It's worth thinking about what that means. It means the batter guessed right, Like when, for instance, there's this whole thing yesterday when India were chasing the openers were batting, like Gill and Rohit Sharma. And they were, Matt Henry was doing his, he bowls that wobble seam. He was doing that and, the ball was pitching and it was doing weird things. Gill was getting beaten 3 times in an over and whatnot. And Rohit Sharma, every now and then, he would just, run down the pitch and smash the ball like over mid-on. Like, and right now, he's connecting everything whenever he runs down the pitch and does that. So he could go over for 6. And the temptation there is to say, well, he's being very respectful of the good balls. He's picking his balls to hit so expertly, this and that. But he's not really. He's taking a chance. When he is running down the pitch, he doesn't know that the ball is not going to misbehave off the pitch, right? And when the ball is moving off the pitch as much as it was yesterday in the first like 10, 12 overs, that's a gamble. That's a bold bet to take. I'm going to run down the pitch and this ball is not going to move. And I'm going to cover whatever movement happens. That's a very bold bet for a batter to take. Now, batters are prepared to take that bet. And that's why that's motivated partly by the field settings, what the field settings are offering them, partly by, that's just how they play now. The thing is that the batters are taking more chances. And that's producing bigger scores, but it's also producing South Africa losing to the Netherlands and, even England losing to Afghanistan. Although I have to say, with England, they just sort of reek of a side which is you know, just not playing well right now. You know, their batters are getting out to early mistakes. Their bowling combinations are all messed up. Like they have no, they don't seem to have a settled combination. And their luck has also run out on them a little bit. That they're one like wicket taking new ball bowler they have, Rhys Topley. He's now unfortunately gotten injured. Like freakishly injured. Not even like it's not even like a bowling injury. You know, so I mean, England are just like they just seem to be in a bit of a slump, you know. And it's I mean, you think about it, like you know, 2 years ago there was what, the T20 World Cup in UAE, and India were in a similar slump at that World Cup. You know, they couldn't buy a hit. Nothing they did was coming off for them. You know, England seemed to be in a similar kind of rut, you know. And as you see, you know, when that happens, you see all this, everything the manager coach says, it sort of gets under the microscope. So the mockery of, you know, the data and the analysis is going on. They're complaining about the heat and the weather and so on and so forth. So all these things are, you know, these things are there all the time, no? I mean, it's not like when England came to India and won, the weather was really much better than it was on the weekend, you know, or in Bombay. It was the same weather, but you know, when you don't play well, you look for things to blame.
I wanted to just go back to that point about taking chances, right? So it takes me back to, you know, when Tendulkar used to open for India, and there was this 96 World Cup where he was, you know, in real great form. And he made India's first game in that World Cup was against Kenya. And he makes 100 against Kenya in that World Cup. And then after that, they play Australia in the tournament. And he makes 90. And, you know, he's just going, like, he's trying to go after McGrath. Like, you know, he's, you know, giving himself, like, he's opening up his stance. He's coming down the track. He's doing different things to go after McGrath. And in the commentary, I forget who it was. There was somebody in the commentary saying, you know, after playing such a flawless innings without taking any chances against Kenya, why is he batting like this? And Ian Chappell was on air and he said he's batting like this because McGrath is bowling really well. So he put it in perspective immediately. The reason Tendulkar had to do all these different things and try and sort of hit McGrath was because McGrath was bowling so well that day. And unlike the Kenyan bowlers who, you know, he could just basically stand and hit. He didn't have to really take any chances. So, you know, it makes a huge difference. So when you see somebody like Rohit Sharma come down the track and try and hit over the head, it also means that he feels that he has to do that to hit a Henry or
Bolt. Yeah, I mean, it's also credit to the bowler. No, otherwise, he's not going to get anything. No, I mean, this is why I think, if you remember last time we talked, I thought that, you know, England, South Africa, New Zealand, they would go after either Siraj or Kuldeep, you know. And, you know, that was before the Hardik Pandya injury. You know, last time we talked, Hardik Pandya was not injured yet.
Yeah, he was fit, yeah.
So, you know, and of course they're going to go after Thakur and Pandya, but that's still just the fifth bowler. So, we felt that they had to go after somebody who was bowling those 40 overs. And I thought that they would. And one of the problems India have is that when Pandya is not there and they're playing only five bowlers, then when the guy gets hit, like when they go after Kuldeep or take chances against Kuldeep or take chances against Siraj, and it comes off, you know, then Rohit Sharma has to decide, like, does he just stick with Kuldeep and stick with Siraj, or does he take them off and bowl somebody else? And that bowl somebody else is a problem for India, because see, then you have bowlers bowling when you don't want them to bowl, right? So it messes up like Rohit Sharma's plans, basically. He doesn't want Jadeja to bowl when there are two lefties batting. But if the lefties go after Kuldeep, like if some lefty comes and reverse sweeps Kuldeep Yadav, like for three fours in an over, and then next over the other lefty, you know, slogs him for two sixes, then he's gone for like 25 in two overs. And then what do? You know, so with five bowlers, that's a problem. And it happened yesterday for against New Zealand. That's why Daryl Mitchell and Rachin Ravindra were going after Kuldeep Yadav. You know, and India had to take Kuldeep off. You know, now, fortunately for them, Mohammad Shami got a 5-wicket all. And he got a wicket first ball and et cetera, et cetera, all that.
That was a bit of good luck for India. If he had not got that 5-wicket all, New Zealand may well have got those extra 20 runs in the end. You know, but the thing is that you're always going to run into like some player who's in red hot form. Like, you know, Daryl Mitchell, before he made this 130 yesterday, he had made, what, 89 not out against Bangladesh? And that was a really fast 89 not out. And before that, he made runs against Holland also. And like this year, he's made like, I think, 400 or 500s already before this match. So he's in really good form in their middle order this year. So, and that sort of player is going to take chances. You know, if you get lucky and you get to bowl to a player who's a little short of runs, who's maybe, you know, when he sees a good length, the Kuldeep Yadav, toss it up just a little bit more than normal, he's not going to run down the pitch. You know, like, I think, for example, you know, Babar is a little short of runs, and so he's not prepared to attack the spinner as much as he would if he was, like, coming in off, like, 200 or 300s in the last three or five or six games that he played. But in this World Cup, India are going to run into players who are in form, you know. And, like, they will run into Kusal Mendes when they play Sri Lanka. They'll run into David Warner if they play Australia again, you know. And at some point, England's batting order is going to click. The thing to expect is that, you know, 220 all out and 350 for five, there's not really that much difference between those. The difference is in whether, like, you know, you mentioned that six which Jadeja hit off Rachin Ravindra yesterday during the run chase. It just went like a 3 feet over the boundary. And it's like if that fielder had not lost his footing, he might well have caught it. And, you know, if Jadeja had missed it slightly, it may well have, you know, slightly more if he had missed it, it might well have gone for a catch well inside the boundary. So bowling sides are, you know, trying to buy a batsman. You know, that was why Ravindra was bowling, actually, too. Because with 44 and 54, there was no way New Zealand were going to defend that. They had to get India out. And so it was a good idea to, you know, try to buy Ravindra Jadeja when you still have like 45 runs to play with. So that the 220 and 350 is really not that far apart. The difference is between, in one case, the chances the batter is taking come off, and in another case, they don't come off. You know, the whole old-fashioned thing where, you know, teams are like pushing the ball around and trying to get to 40 overs and keep wickets in hand, that's gone.
In 2019, that World Cup, and leading up, the way England were playing, the way England have been playing since 2016, it was the reverse, because they said, we are not going to wait till over 40 to go on all. We will just keep going. Yeah. We will go from, we'll hit the first few overs, then we will keep hitting. We will keep our batting till 10 and we'll keep hitting. That has been the way ODI cricket has functioned. I'm just surprised.
That's how England are set up now, no?
Exactly. But I'm just surprised. But in this World Cup, teams are not doing that. Teams are either because, number one, the conditions are changing, quite considerably for them to, take a call on what the par score is in different conditions. And in India, you have that. You know, in some grounds, you have to have 350. In some grounds, you have to, you know, even 300 or 290 is good enough. Some grounds, even lesser. So I think that could be, the other thing could just be that, you know, also they're playing good bowling attacks. So, you know, if you're playing, see, like India, New Zealand, South Africa, you know, Australia on their day. I mean, these are all like really good attacks. I mean, solid bowlers with experience and, you know, test class bowlers, you know, who can get through a spell and get you the wickets, enforce. These are not easy bowlers to just keep hitting. And maybe you can do it in
stumps.
And attack this. Yeah, exactly. So, and even if you have like just a little bit in the pitch, like you don't even need like a good bowling pitch or anything. You just need like a little bit in the pitch. These bowlers are good enough to find that help and, you know, put the batsman in trouble. That's how good they are. So, yeah. You know, I think all that has played a part. Yeah, I think also I think things will change. I mean, you know, as of now, I mean, it could well be in the second part of the tournament, India is much preferring to bat first. I mean, because of where they're playing and the venues, the conditions, the teams they're playing against. And these days, you look also very closely at these matchups and things. No, so would you rather face, Rabada and these South African bowlers in the evening, or would you face them in the day? They'll all be all that that's coming in also. So I won't be surprised if India enter the semi. I mean, India will enter the semi-finals now, pretty sure. But I won't be surprised that in the semi-finals and finals, if they say, okay, if they take the reverse approach and say, you know, let's bat first. So yeah, these things could change depending on venue to venue.
Teams which are chasing, they're not really interested in their net run rate. You know, like you can imagine MS Dhoni in that England-South Africa game, no? When South Africa made 400 and England collapsed, England lost 5 wickets really quickly, you know, 68 for 5. And you can imagine MS Dhoni, you know, just, you know, cussedly sticking there and making like a, you know, 85 and 110 balls and getting India to like, you know, 255 or something like that, you know, and helping the net run rate. England are no such interest, you know. They the 170 all out they got. So basically they're going to get absolutely murdered in the net run rate. So I'm curious as to why teams are not like pursuing the net run rate position.
You know, Ravi Shastri's famous thing, he used to say, you have to bat out the 50 overs, come what may.
Yeah.
But that teams are not doing that. They're like, okay, we are still like trying to, you know, go score. So, which is also weird for me, because if you're 6 down, you might as well try and make the most of it and limit the damage a bit instead of getting all out for 190.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why maybe they think that, you know, the net run rate is not going to affect the table position. I'm not so sure. You know,
Potter is saying, I think net run rate is now going to eliminate at least 2 teams, if not 1.
You think so?
Yeah. See, that's another thing, right? Like we think that Bangladesh, Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, and Netherlands are not going to make it to the top 4. Which might probably happen. I mean, which is the most likely result. But that doesn't mean that they are not going to win any matches. They can prevent, you know, a few teams from reaching the semi-final spot or getting stuck with like 5 wins.
Yeah. Look at what's happening right now. Firstly, we are only, how many matches? 21 matches into the World Cup now. No?
Yes.
This is,
yes.
Today's fixture is the 21st match.
Yeah, 22nd.
I think Afghanistan, Pakistan is game 22. Yeah.
Yeah. And every team has already won at least once.
Yeah.
There is no winless team in this World Cup yet. You know, and right now, like Afghanistan are chasing 283 and they are 105 for no loss in 16 overs. So, you know, that.
I think what is going to happen is, I mean, I think like 3 teams will get stuck with 5 wins, man. Somewhere this is going to happen. 3 or 4 teams are going to get stuck with 5 wins. And net run rate will determine at least 1 or 2 of those teams who go. I am seeing New Zealand, maybe they have a chance of doing that. South Africa also are not very, I'm not very sure. Because right now in the table, only one team I think will go comfortably through with 6 or 7 wins. That is India, because they don't look like they can lose to New Zealand or Sri Lanka. So I think those 2 wins are guaranteed. And England in their current form, India can win. So I don't think India are going to get too bothered about the net run rate. Every other team...
I'll tell you one...
I think there is a problem.
I think we have to mention something about New Zealand here. And this is something that, I think is important. Because every time New Zealand does win in a World Cup, no, there is like this cliche of, see, this is such a small country, they're punching above their weight, this, that, and all. That is okay. That is fine. That is all cliche. And that is... We know they're a small country. Fair enough. But still, they produce good cricketers and all that. But one thing that we must, I think, is worth pointing out with New Zealand is they are very smart in these tournaments. They, when they reach this sort of this banana peel kind of games, they make sure that they try and they will usually win it. Like we were discussing on the group, right? When is the last time like a lower ranked team, you know, like Netherlands or Afghanistan beat New Zealand in a world tournament? I mean, it's not that common that you see these sort of reversals with New Zealand. Also, if you notice, New Zealand does not lose by these massive margins. You know, this sort of limiting the damage they're good at. So even if they lose, they will try and lose by like, you know, a respectable margin. So I think all that plays a part in them invariably being in contention for the final four slot. So that is part of it. It's like, you know, it's not only just that you play well, it's also you play smart. If you lose, you lose the way you blew a loss against India. At least then, you know, you're like, okay, some damage has been limited. But you lose the way England lost against South Africa means what? I mean, your run rate is automatically obliterated, man, at that point of time. You're not even like giving yourself a chance.
No, see, South Africa's last four matches. No, South Africa are facing Pakistan. They are facing Bangladesh, Pakistan, New Zealand, India and Afghanistan. Of which three are tough. India is tough, New Zealand is tough, Pakistan is tough because they are facing it in Chennai. They can't just plant their foot forward and hammer people. It's tough. So South Africa is also not guaranteed, you know, six wins here. Same with New Zealand. New Zealand and I think even with Australia, I think. Australia may have had one or two easier matches, I think. Who do they have? Let's check.
They play New Zealand in Dharamshala on a morning, in a day game, which would be an interesting game.
So next is, right away they are facing Netherlands, which they are favourites to win. They have an Afghanistan match in Wankhede, which they are favourites to win. Bangladesh in Pune, they are favourites to win. So they have three where they are favourites to win. England in this form, I think Australia might get through because it's Ahmedabad. They can just hammer these English bowlers. So Australia are actually not in a very bad space.
We should. I mean, Ashoka will get very upset if we don't do this. But, you know, it's also merited. Now, we should mention Mitchell Santner, who's been fantastic in this World Cup.
Yeah. He's been one of the best spinners. In fact, he's been their Jadeja. And he's been their Jadeja in
quick,
bowling.
He's quick.
And... but the best part is he's quick, but at the same time, he's now also developed this great variation in terms of his pace. So again, if you see his sort of graph, he will bowl one ball in the 90s and then he will suddenly hold it back and bring it back to the early 80s and all that. So he's bowling like a Jadeja. He's fielding like a Jadeja, perhaps even better than Jadeja. And he's capable of batting like a Jadeja. So he's almost become like their Jadeja now.
Hey, why are you saying all this, man? CSK picked him like for like replacement as for Jadeja. That's all. That's all you needed to say. They know what
and
quality of players are.
And I think he's auditioning also for next CSK captain, given how he's...
Now you're saying too many things which will likely get... You know, you banned.
Next CSK captain. I'm not saying you should throw out the current
captain.
I'm saying he's... Yeah, I'm not saying that. I'm saying after... Whenever the great Thala decides to take rest, then you can have Santner.
What do you mean take rest? He's already doing that.
Yeah, he's already taking rest. That's true. Anyway, let's not get into Thala discussions now.
One thing we should mention is that, you know, India's top order is getting to that situation where, you know, they're all scoring lots of runs and they're all scoring consistently such that there's going to be one day when they are like three or four of them get out early. Because
Yeah, we know that. It's called semifinal. We know that already.
Yeah.
You don't have to say it out loud. We all know it. We all are trying our best to ignore it.
We'll see. But again, I think this is India's World Cup to lose, man. I mean, I really don't know if this team is like, we thought the 2019 team was like really, really, really good. And they got, New Zealand in Old Trafford in that match spread over 2 days in conditions that favored the Seamers. So, but then this team, I think, is like a notch above that team.
They've gone through the whole podcast without mentioning the most important event of the week.
Which is Virat Kohli getting 100s.
Which is Virat Kohli selfishly refusing singles, trying to get 100s twice in the same week in a World Cup.
No. Let's actually talk a bit about this, because this whole thing is becoming so... See, first of all, in both that Bangladesh game as well as this New Zealand game, the victory was... It was not like, India had plenty of deliveries left. There was plenty of time left. And in fact, they did not want to take risks. That is against New Zealand, the reason they did not want to lose a wicket because then the tailenders would come in. So here is this guy who is trying to get his 100. I don't really see a big... What? This is all I would even call it some fun and games, man. I mean, see, against Bangladesh, when KL Rahul basically told him that, this is a chance for you to go for the 100. I will make sure I give you the strike. This is basically a teammate saying, okay, I mean, easy has a chance to get 100. Let's go for it because the game is anyway wrapped up. So I don't get the outrage over this. And all this like grand pronouncements of cricket being, this is selfishness and cricket is a team game and you cannot play for individual glory.
Where does that come from? Where does all that grand pronouncement come from? From this guy only, no. He's been telling for years and years that I don't play for centuries. And then now he sits and does this. So it's not unwarranted, this kind
when
of outrage.
When somebody says, I don't play for centuries, he means I don't play for centuries at the detriment of the team. That's pretty obvious. He's not saying... But now where there was no detriment to the team when he was getting his 100. And he was also going at a very decent run rate. What is this? It's not
This is not some terms and conditions where I have to read after the asterisks, I have to go down and see, okay, for the detriment of the team. Oh, that is in fine print. You say you're not playing for centuries. I am a simple guy. I am a simple fan. And there are millions like me.
Ashoka, we will. The match state is not the fine print, man. It is the match. The whole idea is one team has gotten itself into a position where it has basically won. Like it's nearly impossible for that team to lose from that position, and it's nearly impossible for the opposition to win from that position, right? So they have so many more degrees of freedom, they have so many more options available to them, the team which is about to win, So when that sort of situation arises, you see the Indian team, like, they have room for this kind of stuff. Look, Kohli's, KL Rahul is refusing singles because Kohli wants to get 100. Jadeja and Kohli are refusing singles because Kohli wants to get 100. Rohit Sharma is calling Dasun Shanaka back because Shanaka is after Shami munkered him perfectly legitimately because Shanaka is close to 100 and, Sri Lanka nowhere near the chase. I mean, the game was basically over. I mean, I think Sri Lanka needed over 100 in like 3 overs or something like that. And, but that's fine. But you guys are missing the main storyline, man. Like, the Bollywood scriptwriter sees this sequence of events and they see the main storyline. KL Rahul is the hero in this story. Why?
Obviously.
Because in the first game, he made 97 not out. He didn't have enough runs because Kohli was so attacking
Hardik Pandya
and Kohli between them denied KL Rahul the 100. That in the next match, when KL Rahul saw that, you know, there was a chance for Kohli to get 100, he said, I must right this wrong. And so he selflessly sacrificed runs, his own runs, to make sure that Kohli got 100. That's a team man. That's a real hero. You guys missed the feel good story. You're always looking for like the villain, like, you know, the conspiracy story.
What about the feel good story of Richard Kettleborough not calling the wide? That is the ultimate feel good story.
No, that is not feel good story. That is like a fear that comes from the base of your spine that I have to leave India alive. If I give a wide here, tomorrow my body will not be found after this.
That is the correct technical description of that is, it is professional courtesy.
Well, now that we started the podcast with, paying our respects and condolences to Bishan Bedi, I will end this podcast with a Bishan Bedi story, which is connected to what you are saying about Richard Kettleborough. Famous test match in Jamaica in 1976, where India basically, chased that 400 target in the previous test in Trinidad. They come to Jamaica, they have this absolutely, you know, spicy pitch where Michael Holding is running red hot and injuring batsmen, sending them to the hospital. India is basically not able to score any runs and they're not saving batting to save their lives, literally. And Bedi even declares, because he doesn't want the tailenders to get injured / die. And then Bedi goes up to the umpire, who is Douglas Sanghue from the West Indies, and he says, what the hell? Why are you allowing this kind of bowling? Isn't there anything to prevent you from, you know, this stopping these bowlers bowling like this? And Douglas Sanghue, in a line which is perhaps apocryphal, but perhaps also true, looks at Bishan Bedi and says, Mr. Bedi, you will go back to India in a few days. I have to live here. So, so on that note, we can probably say the same about Richard Kettleborough. Kettleborough is telling that Bangladeshi bowler, you what? You will finish and you will go finish the World Cup and go home. I have to continue my job, man. I need an umpiring job. So, on that note, thank you. Thank you for joining. We will talk again. We will get back, in a week's time to review India's next game. And also, you know, India's next game is, of course, against England. And we will also talk about the other happenings in the World Cup. Lots to discuss, lots to speak. Virat Kohli may or may not have had another 100 by then, or may or may not have had another 90. So we will talk about that too. 81allout.com is our website. At 81allout is our Twitter handle. And you can support us on Ko-fi, ko-fi.com/81allout. Thanks for all those who have been contributing. War Minus the Shooting by Mike Marcusi. Can't recommend it highly enough. It's a book that we republished. It's a book about the 1996 World Cup. Talks about the tournament, the various other cultural aspects that surrounded that tournament. The politics, the sort of the history, and generally it's a travelogue that's beautiful to read. So please pick it up. I'll link the other books that we have republished too. Cricket Beyond the Bazaar by Mike Coward and The Summer Game, a classic work by Gideon Hay. So thanks for joining. Thanks, Ashoka. Thanks, Karthikeya. And good night.
India have won the series. They're going to get back.